Also of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. My name is Selma Weiss. I am interviewing Burton Hirsch on May 17, 1993. Would you please give us your address?
This address, excuse me, is 2704 Murray Avenue, Pittsburgh, PA, 15217.
Thank you. Well, I guess we'll start with your family when you were young. Tell me about your family.
Background, sure. First of all, I am third generation Pittsburgh. My grandfather was born in Pittsburgh, Forbes Avenue down near the Mercy Hospital. And he was in business with his brother in what was known then as the Volksblatt Freiheitsfreude, the German newspaper in the city, because the large population of Jews in that the city at that time were, of course, German, not refugees, they were just German immigrants. And they operated the paper very successfully for a number of years. My grandfather was a city councilman when they had what they called the Royal and Select Council, which would be something comparable to the Senate and the House of Representatives. And my great uncle, his brother, Isaac E. Hirsch, was a noted linguist and writer, and he's listed among the notables of the United States and Pittsburgh as speaking a very classic German, very literary classic German. But my grandfather, Louis Hirsch, was in the newspaper business with him, and they were in that business, I think, till pretty close to around 1934. And 33 or 34, when the eminence and the rise of Nazism in Germany started very, very strongly, and the paper had certain connotations being a German paper, and the greater proportion of the German Jews leaving old Allegheny and moving out towards Balm Grove and Oakland and so forth, they decided to sell the paper, and they did. The paper later on, the second owner, was classified as subversive and was disbanded. My father, Max Hirsch, was also born in Pittsburgh, obviously, and operated the first radio retail outlet in the city of Pittsburgh. The radio job. He helped set up and form KDKA Radio. It was first initiated in the William Penn Hotel, by the way. And I came along next. I was born in 1918 in Homewood. Homewood was the classical young Jewish suburban district, and lived there until I was about, oh, I'd say about 14 years of age, and family decided to move to Squirrel Hill for a lot of reasons, not because the neighborhood was going bad, it was still a very good neighborhood, but just to give me the ability of going to Alderdice, having a good array of friends and social abilities, in this general swim area, which was the Jewish population center. I was only in Alderdice for about a period of, I would say, 4 to 6 months. And I transferred to Shadyside Academy. One of the reasons was my father was a graduate of Shadyside Academy and really wanted me to go to Shadyside, but up to that point in time, being of the Depression years, was not able to sustain the tremendous expense. And as times got a little better and so on, I went to Shadyside. So I was a graduate of Shadyside, as was my father. My father was a graduate of Lafayette University, Lafayette College. And from Shadyside, I went to WJ, which really was like a spear of my father. But I didn't care for Lafayette. I did like WJ. And with the WJ until the word came out that the state board, state rules and regulations were going to change, and it would make it rather difficult with the new regulations supposedly would come in for licensing. So I decided at the time to leave WJ and go to mortuary school, which I did. I went to Eccles College of Mortuary Science, which is in Philadelphia. At that time, the foremost college of mortuary science in the United States. It was operated by the Eccles family. The Howard Eccles was known as the father of modern embalming. So I had my training in Eccles College of Mortuary Science. And later on came my son, when I was in business, who went to Bayside also, and later went to the University of Minnesota School of Mortuary Science, and came back to Pittsburgh and worked with me. And very unfortunately, in 1986, he died at the age of 31 years of age. So that's the basic background of the family.
I'm curious to know, what made you decide to go to mortuary school? None of your family had been in that business.
Very, very interesting story. I'll try to abbreviate as much as I can. As I indicated, my father was the first radio jobber in the city of Pittsburgh. In those years, you didn't go into a store and buy a radio and turn it on and listen to it. You made your own radio because if you were lucky, you could get maybe, Altoona or Johnstown, which didn't have stations, obviously, but you couldn't get any distant stations. They used to have what they called a crystal and a cat's whisker. That was the term they gave to it. And you moved that cat's whisker over the crystal until you got the reception you want. You had your radio station. And a gentleman came in my father's store, I think it was a Tuesday or Wednesday, wanted to buy some parts for a radio. And because business had been so very good, he sold out quite a bit of those parts. And he said that he wouldn't be getting these parts in until Thursday or Friday. If he'd leave his name, telephone number, when the parts came in, he would call him. He gave his name as Drum and the telephone number. And that was it, left the store. The parts came in on Thursday. My father called the telephone number, and he reached the Holy Rosary Church, which was rather peculiar, but he thought, man might be a maintenance man, to tell him what he may be. And he asked for Mr. Drum. And the secretary, the young lady who answered the phone, said, "We have no Mr. Drum here." He said, "Well, this man gave me this number. I'm Pittsburgh Radio Appliance, and he ordered some parts, and I have the parts here." He said, "Well, we don't have anyone by the name of Mr. Drum, but we have a Father Drum." So he said, "Well, could I speak to him?" Certainly. Father Drum got on the phone and he said, "I don't know whether you're the gentleman that was in my store or not. Pittsburgh Radio Appliance Store." He says, "Oh, yes, I'm the man that was in." He said, "Well, why did you tell me you were a priest?" He said, "Well, I didn't want to, just thought I'd give you my name as Drum." And he said, "Well, the parts are in, and you're welcome to get the parts anytime you want, but where do you, you're at the rectory at Holy Rosary?" "Yes, I am." Which was on Kelly Street, near Homewood Avenue. So my father said, "We live right around the corner from you, on Bennett Street." And he said, "Why don't I just bring the parts home, and you can collect them from my home?" I said, "Fine, I'm happy to do that." So my father went home to my mother and on Thursday and said he was going to bring these parts home, and Father Drunk was going to pick them up. He said, "Well, why don't we invite him for dinner Friday night?" He said, "Fine." So he called Father Drum. He said, "If you're going to come over for the parts, would you like to have dinner with us on Friday evening?" So my father, Father Drum said, "I'd be delighted." So Father Drum came for dinner on Friday night, which turned out to be a relatively regular Friday evening dinner. And it was coming close to summer. And being a young lad and not having too much money in those days, and I knew it was Papa Drum. Known as Father Drum, Papa Drum. And I asked him one day, "Papa Drum, do you know where I can get a summer job?" Not right off, he said, "But let me think about it for a while." And there was a funeral director right across the street from the directory. I can't think of his name now. I forgot that. I thought it was Hanlon, but it's not. And came back a couple of weeks later, and he says, I have a summer job for you. He says, working for a funeral home, and you'll get 2 cents a basket for carrying the flowers from the funeral home over to the church. So I had a summer job, was carrying flowers, sweeping the sidewalk, and was doing a lot of things around the funeral. I just fell in love with the business. And worked for it for 2 years. Then when I went to college, I just completely forgotten about it, although I still had the back of my mind the recesses about the funeral industry. Came home on a vacation, a spring vacation. My advisor, W.J., said that you're going to have to make up your mind. You're going to have three majors that you want to be. And I said, well, I don't know. He said, but you have to have, we have to know how to lay something out for you. I said, well, I'm really not interested. Put down medicine as one. Put down law as the second. I don't know about the third. He said, we have to have a third choice. He said, why don't you go home for spring vacation and think about it and come back and let me know. So I had an uncle of mine, my mother's brother-in-law, my mother's sister's brother, who had two daughters. Was graduate of the Virginia Military Academy or Institute. And I just went over to visit him one day, and we got talking about college and so forth, and he talked about the possibility of the law and so on. And he said, do you ever think about becoming a funeral director? And right away that aroused that sedentary thought in my mind about becoming a funeral director. I went back to school, gave him a third decision about funeral profession, and he was immediately so taken, because I'd never had anyone in Washington Jefferson who thought of that, that he made two or three appointments with the local funeral directors, and I ended up working for them during my college years until I decided to go to mortuary school.
That's an interesting story.
That's the background.
Yeah. Well, let's get back to your youth.
Sure.
What about your Jewish education?
Well, I was brought up with Rhoda Scholl. Product of the Rhoda Scholl congregation. My great-grandmother, I am told, was one of the founders of Rhoda Scholl. Her name was Helene Einstein Hirsch. She was a cousin, maybe two or three times removed, of Albert Einstein. And my grandmother, grandfather, mother, and father were all members of Rhoda, so I had my background in Rhoda Scholl, which was a classical reform education. I knew very little of Judaism as, let's say, an observant or a practicing Jew until I decided to do this business. Then I had a lot of quick.
Were you bar mitzvahed?
No, they had no bar mitzvahs. Not in those days.
Did they have Hebrew school?
No, not in those days. Nope. Only thing you were taught at Rhoda Scholl was some biblical history, biblical background, and maybe a smattering of the prayers that were used in services, the Shema's and things like that, but other than that, not really Hebrew.
What could you tell me something about the life in the city then? We were just discussing how things have changed tremendously.
In what respect?
Just in everyday living, school, how the schools were different, the health services, just about
well, everything. I can recall very vividly, I went to Homewood Elementary School, and it was very basic education, of course, with milk and cookies during the day. That was it. That was as far as the schools provided. Went to Westinghouse Junior High, and a section of East Liberty, or I shouldn't say East Liberty, Homewood, up around the Leamington, Lincoln Street area was starting to become infiltrated with a lot of the blacks. And of course, they came to Westinghouse Junior High. That was their was the scope of the area, because those days they didn't bus. And I suppose my parents were, to a degree, concerned about about the, not the question of association with blacks, but as I have later found out to some degree, when you have a coterie of black families that are not well educated, as in those days they were not, your element of education decreases to some degree in value. So I think that they were more concerned with that in moving to Squirrel Hill than anything else. Of course, there was also the word, at that point, there weren't a lot of Jewish families of my age who left in the Homewood area, and I think that they were equally concerned about my abilities of social relationships as well. I think, I'm not positive. I can tell you that Westinghouse High School in those days began to be a dangerous place. It was still a dangerous place. Not drugs so much. Drugs wasn't a problem. But anybody that had any measure of money on them, in those days 25, 50 cents was a lot of money to have on you, the blacks would gather up on you and they would rob you and steal. I had a very, very good friendly young black man who I befriended in school, who was pretty high on the totem pole of authority, you might say. And he kind of looked after me. I wasn't bothered to touch too much. We had no drugs, as I can recall, in those days. Meth was a big thing, more than anything else. So we moved to Squirrel Hill, and for the very short period of time that I went to Alderdice, we didn't have a drug problem that I can recall. But there was a problem in as much as the Greenfield youth were coming into Alderdice, and there was constant fights out in front of the school almost every day of the week. The Jewish boys just wouldn't take any gaff from the Greenfield. The Greenfield were always looking for a fight, and there was, sure enough, always a fight.
It hasn't changed.
Not much. Of course, not so much Greenfield anymore as it is the busing in from the other areas. But that was the. Now, I went to, as I say, I was transferred to Shadyside, so there were only, in those years, Shadyside didn't open their arms to Jewish people as much as anyone else. So there were a very limited number of young men who went to Shadyside. I think in my class, I can't be sure of the exact number, but I would safely say that there were only about 5 to 7 Jewish boys in my senior class. Below that, there weren't too many either.
Did you feel any anti-Semitism when you were in?
No, not at all. Now, there may have been, but it wasn't displayed in any way at all. I can recall that when we went to the various social functions or the proms and so forth, we were accepted, and our dates were accepted. Maybe they didn't like the idea, or maybe better yet, the parents didn't like the idea of a relationship. But we had no problems now. It might have existed. I think it was underground, and maybe even more at the level of the parents who didn't like the idea of their children relating with Jewish children. I don't know if that could, as I see it, look back.
Let's talk about your years of marriage, how you met your wife.
Well, I've known my
your
wife.
Your children.
Yes, I've known my wife all my life, from the time I moved to Squirrel Hill. Couldn't stand her. Walk around the block to stay away from her, and likewise she with me. Thought I was a wild young kid, didn't want anything to do with me, had no, was no settling benefits or abilities. And
what was her name?
Ruth Leff. And they lived on Phillips Avenue. She had a younger sister. And when I returned from the Army, spent 4 years in the Army, there were just no girls to date. Well, they were either all married or engaged to be married as a result of relationships of the war. My parents lived at that point in Cambridge Spring. My father operated later got out of the radio business and so forth, and went into stainless steel manufacturing and also bought a plant in Erie, which was a high highway cement mixer manufacturing plant. And I lived with Jack Kahn. Jack Kahn, as you probably know, Jacques Kahn, he's the executive director of the Golden Triangle Association and also Kahn Associates Advertising. Jack and I are very, very close friends. And Jack came to Baltimore. His parents were, his father lived in Baltimore. His mother was a Pittsburgh. She was a Sable. And my aunt, my father's sister, lived on Worth Street. And she had room for me to live there. And Jack decided to come live with me. So the two of us lived together. And Jack, eventually, after the war, married a girl by the name of Adeline Fichterhaus. Now, they owned the grocery store at the corner of South Negley and Northumberland. It's now Carpet Outlet, I think. I can't think
right.
of it. But they lived there. They lived above the store. And Jack married Vicky, as she was known. And we used to go to a lot of screenings. Jack was an advance PR man for Warner Brothers at that time. Tremendous background history that is very classical, very interesting. You should get him sometime as far as the interview is concerned. He is really a classic guy from that standpoint. And Jack went downtown with Vicky one day to buy her dress. Oh, we get back. We went to a lot of screenings, Jack. Did a lot of screening for Warner Brothers and the local theaters to come see the pictures and so forth. So I was always in a screening. And Jack kept saying, why don't you get a date? Why don't you get a date? Why don't you get a date? There were no dates to be had. So Jack took Vicky downtown one day to buy her dress at the David shop in the Wavetown Hotel, which was owned by the same people who owned the Wavetown Avenue in those days. And my wife worked there, really. Worked at the David shop. So Jack came home to me, and we were going to a screening on Saturday night. Jack came to me on Wednesday or Thursday. He said, I got a date for you. This been a gal, you love her, and so forth. I said, what's her name? She said, Ruth Lipp. I said, oh, no, not Ruth Lipp. Of all people, no. But at any rate, I called Ruth. And as it would have it, she was busy and couldn't go out with me. And I said, well, I'll give you a call again sometime. She thought that was the end of it. We found out later. And, there was another screening about a week later, so I called her again. And she went out with me, and that was the beginning of the end. And we went together for a very short period of time. We were engaged and married. We had two children, Maxine, my oldest daughter. Not my oldest daughter, my oldest child, rather. Lives in Houston, Texas now. She's a therapeutic massage instructor. She just had a horrible disappointment in life, which I'll tell you about later. It's not part of the interview, obviously. Not of any illness, though. And then my son was born in 1955, and he lived about the funeral home, both born here. And in 1958, the business was going to a point after we opened. Just doing very good. We had more room in chapel. So we moved to Churchill, a lot of room in Churchill, and right across the street from the home that my father had bought. I never moved in because he took sick and died of a heart attack. And lived in Churchill until 1964. And we moved back to Squirrel Hill for two reasons. One, I don't know which is more important than the other, although they both had equal importance. One was that I had traveled that parkway four or five times a day round trip. We used to have evening visitations. Terrible. And my wife was probably at that point the only unlicensed taxi cab driver in the city because our children were young and they were going to Rhode Island and there was a round trip with the social affairs and sleepovers and so forth. Second reason probably moved, and I think maybe more important. We went to a movie one evening out in Churchill area, and I won't use names, but one of her neighbors was there to pick up his daughter who had a date, and they, of course, didn't have room to drive. And they came out in the lobby afterwards, and he turned to his daughter, and he said, "Would you like to introduce your boyfriend to Mr. and Mrs. Hirsch?" And yes, and this is John McGillicuddy. And very nice young man, and so forth. So after they left, we walked into the theater and sat down, and I looked at my wife, and my wife looked at me, and she says, "What are we moving?" Because we were concerned, of course, of our daughter's sexual relationships and marriage, Jewish children, and so forth. So we, at that time, bought a piece of property over on Mount Royal Road, sold our home in Churchill. Well, I had a piece of property over in Elmhill, Marbury, which I sold at the time also. We were thinking of building out there, which I'm glad we did, and moved back to Scrooge. My daughter went to Winchester Thurston, and she was very unhappy because there wasn't the number of Jewish relationships there. And while no one, I understand, made her feel at ease, she nevertheless did feel it. She didn't feel she was part of the, as girls would be, as part of the mainstream of kids, and she just didn't want to continue, so she came back to Alderdice for her final year and was graduated from Alderdice. Then she went to junior college in Atlanta, Georgia. I can't think of the name of it now. But they say the first thing that goes to mind. Massey Junior College. And it was particularly noted for its ability of design, theater design, art design, clothing design, set design, and so forth, which she at that point was interested in. So she went to Massey Junior College for 2 years, took her final year in London, never moved back to Pittsburgh, loved Atlanta, stayed in Atlanta, and married her photographic instructor, which we were very unhappy about. I went back to meet him. Very, very unhappy with it. First of all, he wasn't Jewish. And but there was no way of talking her out of it. And unfortunately, it was either one of two things. And I hate it. I always said, heard that story about, I guess I'll have to accept her because I don't want to lose a daughter. But I was at the point of saying I'd rather lose a daughter than accept her. So I was just on the border line as such. He was just NG. Very, came from a very fine family. Very fine family. Father was a neurosurgeon, mother was a nurse and an artist, but he just a lazy individual, no potential. And my daughter eventually decided to move to Houston because someone told her about massage therapy, and she thought she would look into some part of holistic medicine. So she went to Houston, and her husband then followed her, and she started to go to university of Houston, taking a lot of anatomy courses and so forth, and then finally was licensed. They have a license in Texas as a therapeutic massage, and then opened two schools to teach it. So she's remained there, and then she divorced. She said, you were right, Dad, you were 100% right, I should have listened to you and so forth, but she's a very headstrong young lady, and you couldn't talk her out of it at the time. So she's still in Houston. And does very well. And unfortunately, my son, I can't tell you where, how, why, and when. And I can't put the nail on the head that he got caught up in that peer pressure situation with drugs. And drugs led to alcohol, and alcohol led to drugs. And we're very open about it because we just feel that the parents and others should know about it. We were open about when he died. We insisted that Dr. Jacob address it in front of everyone. We just didn't feel that there was anything to be ashamed or afraid of or hide from. But he was a very valiant young man. We were able to be connected with Dr. Twersky, who is the essence of whatever you want to call it in his field. And not only that, but extremely basic and cooperative. We became very close friends. In fact, we're Abe and Bert now. And Lord finally, of his own free will, admitted to go into Gateway. Came very close to Dr. Tversky, very close to him. Came out of Gateway, and,